And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. Yeah. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Today, let us make them remember. We are not afraid!
Undefeared here in Declare. Your independence, me, Ernest Hancock, here in Phoenix, Arizona, from the beautiful studios of Freedom's Last, FreedomsPhoenix.com. Ooh, I made it. All right. Tipper chose restarting his computer because he needs to restart his computer because it's probably Windows. Because, damn it. So, he'll be on here in just a second. You know, we're going to be talking about, you know, when you have, for years, you talk about, they're just turning precious metals into paper. How do you do that? Well, it's, you lease the gold, you have it in an ETF, you got kind of sort of, you know, fractional reserve of, we're ripping you off and got the gold thing. And I'm going, yeah, if it's something that represents it and I don't actually have it, you know, they're just turning it into paper. I think a lot of that's going to be going on in the name of, because people are going to be doing a lot of precious metal. Yeah, I didn't even look this morning. Let's go ahead. We got you there, Tim?
Yep, you got me here. Hello, everybody.
Okay. Let's turn you up there. All right. Gold is $1,520 now. Silver is $1,837. That's a big giant. That's like 20-something percent up from just a little while ago. I don't know if anybody, any other stocks doing better than that. You got some of your guys in some precious metals before the precious metals precious metaled? I mean, how you doing there, Tim?
Yeah, no, most of our clients have gold exposure or silver exposure. So that's definitely been a good sign for us. I saw a lot of people freaking out yesterday over Bitcoin, but you know, if you're freaking out over $8,000 Bitcoin, then maybe you should evaluate whether you should be in Bitcoin, you know, at this point, or you might have too much money in Bitcoin if you're going to freak out about that. But
yeah, I'm, I'm going, God, I'm liking this silver thing, man. I think that's going to be the big run. Well, the shirt you have on, it says, "Guns don't kill people, fathers what?"
With pretty daughters do.
Oh, there you go.
I actually wore this to when I was picking up my daughter from school the other day. I forgot what shirt I had on. I'm like, oh crap, I don't know if I should be walking into an elementary school with this, but
God, your wife is so puts up with, so she's like, man, because
she got me this, so
good job. All right. Yeah, she did. I'll make it nice. That's good. Okay. We had Trump's UN speech. Did you watch that?
No.
I did last night.
So we didn't have to. Yeah.
Right. Well, I had nothing else to do, and I'm going, oh man, all right, let's see, because I kind of figured it would be what it was. It is a campaign platform speech of, here comes Donald Trump saying this about that America. And he didn't leave any special interest on his side unturned. Second Amendment and freaking this is why, you know, pro-life America value of, and
red flag gun laws and this is why. I mean,
yeah.
First, because this is why.
Yeah. See, I'm that's not. I've seen a lot of people trying to argue. A little gun control, a little bit. NRA says okay, a little bit. And I'm going, that never has any longevity because they always go bad. You know, it's always, it turns into a vector of which they're going to take something away from somebody in the excuse of. And I'm going, nope, this is not going to go well. But, he gave a lot of red meat for a lot of stuff. Hopefully he kind of pulls back on this red flag. That's not good. Have they passed anything on that?
I don't know, but I know that he was proposing having like Alexa and different AI and Siri and Google Assistant being able to hear what you say in real time to then be able to decide if you should own a gun, or even, you know, sort of like updating the NICS system with AI. And but there has been a guy who shared a meme that says something like, you know, when the alphabet boys, you know, meaning like the CIA, FBI, NSA, come into your house, you know, you give them the one gun you told them about and you hide the other ones. And they actually, this guy got his house raided, and they actually took the guy's dad's, it wasn't even his guns, it was his dad's guns, and they went into his house and stole all of his dad's guns.
Okay, what state was this?
I don't know. And I know there was another guy in Maryland who, you know, actually did have his gun. I think it was actually killed already over red flag laws. So all these people are like, you're just some, which is weird because, you know, I criticized Trump about this and I'm like, you're just some libtard. I'm like, oh yeah, I'm just some libtard who wants no gun laws or repeal all the gun laws and have guns and weed. And
you just don't trust in Trump enough.
Yeah. Don't trust in Trump enough. But we do have a lot of stuff to talk about, to tease later segments with what's going on with the Federal Reserve since the last time I've come on. I mean, they've been extending $75 billion a day in credit to the banks. And so maybe we'll tease that for a little bit later on, because there's every time I go 2 weeks without coming on here, there's just so much stuff that goes on.
I went to three stories to confirm that it was $75 billion a day. I'm going, wait. A week, a month, a year. I mean, you know, what is $75 billion a day that, what, the Fed's pumping in, buying assets, getting treasuries? I mean, what are they talking about?
So we probably need to back this up a little bit, but one clarification is it's pretty much the same $75 billion being recycled, even though it is every day. So it's sort of like if I borrow $10 from you tonight, and then tomorrow morning I pay you back $10.01, and then later on the next day I borrow another $10 and then repeat it over and over again. So it is bad, but it's not quite as bad as it could be.
Yeah, buy me a and actually hamburger now there's and I'll an pay you tomorrow.
There's now actually an additional $30 billion program that's over the course of 2 weeks. So it's actually now $105 billion is what the new extended credit was. But let's dovetail this off what was supposedly supposed to be happening now. Originally, we were going to be selling $50 billion of bonds a month. And we go from selling $50 billion of bonds a month to now we've got to extend $75 billion every single night to keep the whole banking system afloat. But you have to back things up to ask, because a lot of people have no idea what the repo market is. So so what happens is some banks have, there's a certain reserve requirement. Some banks have too much money every night. Some banks don't have enough money. And what they do is the banks will borrow from each other. So the banks that have too much money will then lend to the banks that don't have enough. And then they'll all settle up that way. And then in the morning, you know, they'll all then, give the money back. So it's only an overnight lending. And when you hear the Fed funds rate, the only thing that actually refers to is the interbank lending rate if you go to the Federal Reserve's discount window. And now this is a topic not a lot of people really know about. So the
Wait. You kind of lost me. Maybe let me clarify this. The amount of money that the banks need to have in reserve was 20%. I don't know what it is now, down to 10, none, whatever. But
I think it's 10 for some banks. For most banks, it's 10. And then for smaller banks, it might be 3. And then for like startup banks, it's actually 0 until like 16 million.
So this is a requirement that they put on the amount of deposits you have, you know, in your bank. People go put the money in. Well, we can lend out 90% of it, but you got to have at least 10% just for people running the bank. Your cash is ready. You're solvent, and you have, when somebody wants it, it's not out somewhere, which is, you know, it's always out somewhere, and you don't know where, but they want to have at least 10% that the bank has to have on its books. At the end of the day, if they're out of balance with that, they got to get cash to maintain liquidity in their bank. How far off am I?
Yeah, no, that's pretty okay. Spot on.
So now you have this liquidity for them to meet the requirement. They're having to go out and borrow. Well, guess what? There wasn't anybody with extra. They didn't have enough. So we don't have enough to meet your kind of... So what did they do? They go, you know what? You don't have enough money to meet our requirement. We're going to give you some.
Actually, it's even crazier than that. Some banks, they were willing to lend money, but at 10%. And some banks were paying 10% to borrow money overnight. And that's when system started breaking down. So we'll get more into that after the break.
Oh, see, we learned something. Tim Pachote, thelibertyadvisor.com, going to help us understand what's going on and how it impacts you. We'll be right back.
from the sixth letter of Captain Mark. A pirate's life is characterized by voluntary interactions. Unfortunately, the crown presses everyone into involuntary servitude. Landlubbers believe slavery was abolished years ago, but the crown still claims to own us when it crimps us into service against our will. Given sufficient ambition, it would gladly draft thousands of hapless victims to kill or be killed. It's simply slavery by another name. Landlubbers are routinely commanded to serve the so-called justice system in jury duty. But before you swell with civic pride, consider that how you feel is irrelevant to the crown. You will appear as ordered or face punitive measures. The crown insists that you participate in your own oppression. A jury summons provides pirates with a unique opportunity to obstruct injustices. A juror can vote not guilty, even if it's proven the law was violated. A juror can acquit for any reason at all, and not even a judge can reverse that verdict. Receiving a jury summons is basically winning the sedition lottery. But if you reveal that you know this during jury selection, you'll probably be dismissed. If the crown foolishly crimps a pirate into jury duty, it behooves the pirate to conceal their intention to nullify unjust laws. If a master takes 100% of your labor, it's called slavery. But if they only take 50%, they call it taxation. A difference of degree, not of kind. Whether the crown claims a fortune or a cent is irrelevant. Most of all, a slave owner desires contented slaves, meaning thoughtless ones that accept their bondage. These house slaves see no contradiction in being drafted in a war to end slavery or summoned to a jury to prosecute tax evasion. An ideal slave knows no higher call than the master's will. The crown's highest ambition is that its slaves revere the authority that subjugates them. But the crown does not own me. I will not surrender my time and treasure to the crown's ambitions. Join the conversation at piratewithoutborders.com.
To be a part of the show, call 602-264-2800, 602-264-2800, and now, Ernest Hancock.
Propagandy, propagandy, if you want to fool the folks, it comes in handy. If you want to tell some lies, pull the wool over their eyes, you can do it with propagandy.
Propagandy, propaganda. You can liberate the babies from their candy. Well, they're going to be liberating you from your candy, your investment, your whatever. But we need to have an understanding of this Fed rate thing all the time. You know, I'm not really sure I get exactly, you know, what's going on, other than the banks have to have a reserve that they have to meet every day. And there wasn't enough money to borrow from other banks to kind of balance it out, which usually wasn't that much. And all of a sudden it's gone. So then they got it somehow from somewhere for something. Tim, explain that to us. How the hell did that happen?
Okay, well, first off, that the propaganda song would be also be a great introduction for all the Greta Thunberg climate change stuff that's going on, which I spent about 5 seconds looking into that, and we can get it. I'll tease that for another segment of like who her parents are and all this other stuff. But anyways, keep it on track here. So what was going on about, it wasn't last Monday, but the Monday before last, you had, you know, the previous day, supposedly the, you know, Iranians hit a Saudi oil field, and then it caused the oil prices to go up. You know, whether or not I believe that, I think, you know, I pretty much do not believe it was the Saudis doing that, but oh well, irrelevant. But anyways, the oil price shot up. I'm thinking that some of these banks may have been, this is all speculation, but some of these banks may have been on the wrong side of that trade. All of a sudden now, you know, there's the, you know, they were probably stopped out a lot of these positions. Now they didn't have enough cash on hand. You also had end of the quarterly tax payments. So a lot of the banks had to, you know, have big outlays for taxes, but you know, all this stuff was known, so it shouldn't have been that big of a deal. But what happens is there's something called the discount window. The discount window is where you can go to the Federal Reserve to borrow money overnight. But what happens traditionally is that nobody goes to the discount window because it has a big stigma on it. Like nobody wants to, you know, be the one that, you know, is riding the short bus to school, you know, so to speak. You know, there's a big giant scarlet letter if you have to go to the Federal Reserve to the discount window, because what that means is it means that the other banks won't lend you money. And if other banks won't lend banks money, then that means that there's obviously probably some problems with that banks, because if a bank won't, like banks won't lend money to another bank overnight. I mean, what's the risk in holding money overnight? I mean, it should be for a bank next to nothing. So it is a giant red flag if other banks won't lend banks money. And so what was happening is that banks even though at the time the Fed funds rate was 2 to 2.25, now it since has dropped. So now it's 1.75 to 2 is the range of what you'd expect to have an overnight lending rate be annualized throughout the year. But some banks were paying, I don't know what's more shocking, that some banks were charging 10%, or that banks were paying 10% to borrow money overnight because they didn't want to have to go to the discount window. So with the Federal Reserve then came in and said, well, we don't want to let, you know, the average tax-paying slave know what banks are actually in trouble. So we're just going to extend. At first, it was like $53 billion of credit, and then that was way overprescribed. Then it was $75 billion, and then they still had like that still didn't even meet enough demand. So now they have like $30 billion of 14-day, you know, two-week loans, and then they also have $75 billion of loans going overnight. So then that way the banks can just, since everybody goes effectively to the discount window, it means that nobody has to go to the discount window in terms of who of knowing the actual bad banks that are there. So this is just keeping these zombie companies alive more and more. It makes it obvious.
When they aren't able to pay, all of a sudden they're going to do this overnight. And, that, you know, we had it here a minute ago, pay back, yeah, it's gone. Okay. So who's responsible for paying that back? Who gets that? Is that just, man, it's another write-off we got to do on the Fed's balance sheet or something? Where does that money come from?
Well, I'm sure if they can't pay it back, then they just end up probably borrowing more money, and they'll just pay back the borrowed money with more borrowed money.
Until they can't borrow any money. That's what happened. You know, in 2008 and 2009, when this went down, it was this, wasn't it? They just didn't have the liquidity, and you better sign here, or your brains or your signature will be on the paper kind of thing. Wasn't this what was going on?
Yeah, there was a complete lack of liquidity in the system. The system was about to implode in on itself. And to some extent, the system does need to implode.
So when you say, lack of liquidity, that liquidity was they needed money to pay somebody for something they didn't have. And it cascaded all the way down, and here we go. Well, what makes this different? You know, this is, what was going on before that's different from this time?
We don't know the exact catalyst yet for this cause. I mean, I gave some of the indications of what I thought could be a potential catalyst, but last time, you know, it was, you know, you had Lehman Brothers going down, you had, you know, Bear Stearns going down in March before that, you had, you know, all the housing stuff going on. Whereas this time it's just, you know, these are basically zombie companies that, a lot of them shouldn't even exist, but absent the cheap credit. And I don't know, it was just maybe a lot of banks were caught up by the 20% spike in oil. Maybe a lot of banks were caught up in the tax payments, but I don't know the exact reason. You know, 3 weeks, as you would say, you know, you got to wait to see what exactly is going on, but it's not a good sign. And I remember when I was at Anarchapoco and Ian Freeman of Free Talk Live interviewed me, I said I was there to, I helped document the ongoing financial collapse. And he goes, well, what do you think is going to be one of the major signs to look out for? And I told him at the time is when the Fed loses control of the interest rates. And now, obviously, I don't think there should be a Fed. They shouldn't be controlling any interest rates. But, you know, commenting on how the system currently is positioned, when the Fed can set a rate of 1.75 to 2, but if the banks are like, well, we're not lending money to, you know, XYZ bank for 2%, we're going to charge you 10. And then, so it doesn't really matter. It just creates.
Why did they do that? Why did they go 10? Because they could, or screw you, or to bring it out, or because they thought they could get away.
Maybe the other banks maybe didn't have, you know, a ton of extra money, and they were thinking, well, hey, if we give money to, you know, let's say Deutsche Bank, is Deutsche Bank going to be able to pay us back? And I'm just using them as more of an extreme example.
So they're getting worried they weren't going to get the risk for them doing it is 10%
overnight. So this is an overnight loan. And then, but now that's 10% annualized throughout the entire year. So it's not like it was 10% for one night, but for only keeping money for one night and have a 10% rate when the Fed funds rate is 1.75 is ridiculous. And so banks would rather borrow money at 10% than go to the discount window and tip off the fact that they're in trouble. And that should be one of the big stories.
So the rate at the discount window is what? 9%?
Well, right now it's 1.75 to 2.
So they would rather go and do this than kind of tip their hand of they needed a bunch of money.
So it's like, you know, it's like if you, you know, tell your parents to go F off and you're out of your house for like a year or two, and then you instead of crawling back to your parents, you go and get a payday loan instead of asking your parents for some money or something. So it's maybe that's a better way to set an analogy to game.
Well, there was another thing, you know, here's a data point. If you go to deepcapture.com, it's Patrick Byrne's site that used to be very busy years ago when he was doing all his SEC going up against a man thing. Well, he just dumped in the last month like four or five articles, and it tells the story. You want to know what really is going on? I wrote a story about it. Like to see it? Here you go. So I read this, and there was he wanted to get a Swiss bank account. And he's open about it. You know, he's like, I'm going to be here and put some gold. And I took my $80 million of this, and I put in a bunch of gold and crypto here, kind of doing stuff. And he had
probably did some charitable giving strategies, too, because if you read his release, that he gave some of it away. So he probably had his charitable.
So we'll go ahead and talk about that. But see, the music starts. You're not allowed. I didn't get to finish what I was going to say. Swiss banker meeting. Go to the stream, live stream, and maybe I have time to tell you with Tim. We'll be right back. That's exactly what I'm talking about. When the music goes, I'm going to push your button, man. Okay, this what Byrne did is he went to Swiss banks, and he goes in, yeah, I want to do it. And he said it was like joining a country club. They wanted to know who you were. They wanted to, meet you. They wanted to, the evaluation up. Well, usually that takes some time, and he was there starting the process. And they go, hey, you're approved, man. We know who you are. Yeah, will you come to dinner? So he goes to dinner with these Swiss bankers and all the stuff that he had been highlighting about slopping the system, the three-day thing and all this other stuff. They go, yeah, we're not really sure we can figure out what the hell is going on. We don't understand. You're highlighting a bunch of concerns that we have because the Swiss, of course, they got the European Central Bank, that they're having to deal with there. You got the U.S., you got the IRS, you got everything. And they're like, whoa, what the hell is going on? They can't figure it out. And what the solution is. So there are some people, some bankers, some financial service guys that are more into privacy or more into accuracy or more in where they're going to put it in the Caymans or, Cancun, or they're going to go to a Cyprus or something like that. And they can see this breaking down. And this time, I think they know to insulate themselves from it. Maybe they're the 10% guys. So I'm wondering how it's viewed and what the alternative is going to be when the petrodollar goes. And this thing in Saudi Arabia and them, it seems like it's all too convenient. So what's your comment?
Yeah, I mean, it does seem like it's all too convenient, especially with all the Saudi stuff that they were planning on doing an IPO. And what better way to have a higher price for your IPO than have the price of oil shoot up through the sky? I mean, that's a pretty good way to.
So they haven't done the IPO yet. I remember them talking about Aramco's going to go public, and if they can spike up oil prices a little bit, it gives their market value more or something.
Yeah, I mean that would be us just being conspiracy theorists.
Yeah, but it's going to happen or it's not. When you're talking billions of dollars, I'll spend a couple $100,000 on some drones from Walmart and go kick some ass, Whatever. I don't know what kind of
drones we can have. Then we can have, we're on the break right now, so we could have, that tweet from Saudi, from Tulsi Gabbard, where she said Trump is basically the Saudis' bitch, for going over there and doing all this stuff. And I couldn't agree more. But meanwhile, you see like my Facebook comments when I post that, and everyone's like, they're our allies, and we need to go over there.
Oh,
and the communists.
God. You're
like,
trolls.
I'm a communist. I'm like, who's we are going to go over there? Are you going to go over there? Are you going to go fight? They're not our allies. And the founding of our country said no foreign entanglement. So, so it's just amazing what you see out there. And
No. See, I don't believe a lot of real people do. I am of the opinion, and it encourages others, so they think they're not alone, that think this way, is it's AI, it's trolls, it's government agents, it's promoters that get paid for by the military industrial go on comment section. I mean, I don't believe that there is. Every time you kind of track it down or you want it, because I would go to a lot of people when we used to give a crap about all the social media crap. I go, all right, cool. I got a show. Get your ass on. Let's do it. Got an email? Got a phone number? Well, come on. I'll let you say whatever you want to say. Let's go say it. They're like, no. And I'm going, you put all this effort you want to, I give you an opportunity. They don't want to because I don't think they're real.
That's what I should do is I should just, look at the top 20 people that troll me the most that I don't even know. And be like,
get them on! Let's do it! Hey, God, bring it on!
20 versus 1, let's go.
Let's do it!
You guys want to call me a pussy? I've already taken on 100 feminists at once and won that one at the Capitol and made them leave. So you think I'm scared of you guys? Yeah, it's nuts. It's the complacency with what's going on. In
all right,
the
here we come back.
What's
it's
really
time
nice.
For Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
Welcome back to Declare Your Independence. Yeah, we're yakking it, and you know, we saved the planet in the break, and I forgot what it was, but you should be on the stream. If you're not on the stream, then you don't know. But so let's summarize. Tell the people what we were talking about in the break.
What were we talking about in the break? I was just trying not to talk to interrupt you, but we're talking about the Saudi oil fields for a while, and then
Tulsi Gabbard thing. Yeah, where is she anyway? Are they going to let her in Democratic debates, or is she just going to hang out until in the end they bring her back? And they don't want her up there, you know.
Her campaign sent me an email today because I donated like $25 maybe like a month or two ago to her campaign. Just not obviously. I know I heard she's CFR. And there's a lot of things I don't agree with, and it's just she's getting the Ron Paul treatment. Not to say that she is Ron Paul. All these provisos, I don't really care. I just want to have somebody up there that's talking a lot of crap about the system. So. And, you know, better to look at her than, you know, some of the other
people. Yeah, no, you got somebody out there anti-war they don't want up there. You're going, yeah, that's what guy gave Ron Paul a bunch of money was the fact that they tried to ice him out. They go, really? All right, we'll just give him some money. To the tune, I think the campaign got like something like 40-something million. And, of course, hundreds of millions of dollars in effort from a lot of, you know, so it just blew them away. And I remember when it first started, his first campaign stop, you know, was here in Arizona. It was March 29th. I remember it was my birthday. March 29th of 07, we went to the airport to meet him. He came, did a fundraiser here. He raised like $40,000 at this, you know, just a small fundraiser guy, you know, in Paradise Valley. But, I mean, you know, it was a nice fundraiser. And they go, if we can raise between $3 and $5 million, we can afford to go and bring our staff and participate in all these debates and do the campaign stops or whatever, $3 to $5 million. I remember, you know, talking to Ron going, and Lou Moore is campaign manager. I go, I don't think you guys get what's coming. You know, that is going to be, it'll be baby money. Maybe that's what you want, but we're going to be spending now. You don't worry about it. Just you'll talk to the hand because here it comes. And when the Lovolution kicked and exploded, woo, and Tulsi Gabbard is setting herself up for the same kind of thing for the same reason that Tim Pachote, Mr. Financial Libertarian Anarchist Advisor of, would give $25 to Tulsi, I might. Just be on the list, piss them off. You gave money. Yes, I did. You know, just to piss you off. So what do you think? She's going to come back into the fold or what?
Yeah, I got an email. This is from yesterday, and it says, we wanted to make sure you heard a new Monmouth University poll released Tuesday means Tulsi is back on the debate stage in October. And then it's saying something like,
this
hey,
week. You know,
and it's saying, hey, pitch in $12 right now to help close out the quarter with a surge in the books to match Tulsi's surge in the polls. So if you guys want to donate, not that I, you know, care. It's just she's up there. I'd rather have somebody talking, you know, about some of the issues that are going on that we care about, like anti-war. So you can't have the Democrats have an anti-war candidate. And then she also was saying that she's not on the bandwagon to impeach Trump right now, which that also puts her in a spotlight. And if I was a Democrat, talk about a potential own goal of drumming up all this impeachment talks over Trump. Now it's Ukraine. Now it's because of him currying favors with Ukrainians who hate the Russians. And so what is he? Is he a Russian agent? Is he a Ukrainian agent? And it gets into all the Joe Biden son, which I can't remember what the name of the son was, but this was the son who this is the son that was banging the other deceased son's ex-wife or widowed wife and doing cocaine in the Navy and getting kicked out. But anyways, this guy got paid something ridiculous, and all this stuff I knew about years ago. So the fact that Trump now is asking the Ukrainian president about Hunter, or I think it's Hunter Biden's ties. I'm not sure if Hunter Biden is the one that was getting paid like $50,000 a month to be a natural gas consultant and got paid millions of dollars. And then Joe Biden was in a Council on Foreign Relations speech, taped, televised, where he even said something like, and we over there, and I was like, you need to fire that prosecutor right now and get him off this case because I've got $1 billion and we're going to withhold that $1 billion. And then guess what? A couple hours later, that prosecutor was fired and we released $1 billion. And then Joe Biden's son got paid millions of dollars. And now the Democrats are like,
now who said release that billions of dollars? That was Trump saying this, right?
So this was Joe Biden. So this was Joe Biden admitting on a Council on Foreign Relations
that they withheld billions of dollars to get them to do whatever the heck it was that they wanted them to do.
To get them to basically fire this one Ukrainian prosecutor.
Okay, so they're going after Trump and saying that, you know, he used some financial arm twisting to get them to investigate or something, right? Is that what this entire thing's about?
I was reading this on the last break, but they just released a transcript. It's not even that long, and I was sort of skimming it. And basically, the transcript was like, you know, hey, we heard there could be some, people have been asking me about what's going on with, you know, CrowdStrike server, and they also are wondering what's going on with, you know, Joe Biden's son. So, you know, could you maybe talk with our attorney general about that? And that's so basically, the Democrats commit all this, you know, grifting and malfeasance and all this, you know, hypocrisy that's going on, and then they want to go after impeach Trump because he asked the Ukrainian president to look into all the crazy
I don't care, and even I don't want him to get any money, you know. The fact is, if you're going to give you money, you know, we need to like investigate some crime. What? Yeah, I don't even care. It's just
it was Joe Biden who gave the $1 billion.
Okay,
and it was only Trump who
so did ask. Trump in that transcript, does it say that he was threatening to withhold some foreign aid payment or something to him?
I doubt it, because I mean, this transcript, I
as
only,
if
like, quickly,
I care anyway. I mean,
only
you
quickly
know,
glanced at it. It's not very long. But,
this is, and they're going to impeach on. What did I always say about impeachment? I want impeachment because what?
Discovery.
You want to have impeachment? We're going to have us a trial. You know, this is going to be awesome. He won't have to spend any money on his campaign. There, all this stuff is just going to be.
It's like they're trying to throw the game right now. I mean, they're doing everything.
What is going on?
The Democrats could easily cakewalk through this election if they wanted to. And it's almost like they're trying to deliberately throw it. And if I was the Democrats, I would deliberately throw it, because
the economy is going to go. Yeah.
Embracing how great the economy is, the free market in air quotes, and the Republicans, conservatives are going to get the blame. So why step in front of this train wreck? Let the Republicans get it, and then you're going to have, you know, a blue country for the next, you know, 100 years. And then the master play is then taking away all the guns and everything else. So if I were the Democrats, I probably would throw it right now, but I don't know if there are even how many of them are that sophisticated. Because, and then the worst thing you want to do is drum up the base about impeachment, because then it's going to drum up a lot of Republicans to vote. I still think Trump's going to lose, but it's almost like they're just trying to throw the game. And I'm just, nothing
lose to whom? I'm Hillary. I mean, this is
it could be.
Well, I want people to, you know, pay attention just out of the entertainment. But
we all lose no matter who wins. So.
Yeah. You know,
like Walmart Employee of the Month, you could be a winner and a loser at the same time.
You know, my thing is, it's it's not that I don't care. This is just a side effect of a general public opinion thing. Trump is a side effect of that. You know, whatever's happening is a side effect. But as it unravels, I'm hoping that people see, we're going to have to depend on ourselves on this one. We're going to have to, you know, start having different kind of communication networks at hailing frequencies, invisible, and, you know, private money, and the gadda-da-da-da. We just need to run away from this big giant train wreck that's going to claim some kind of future earnings forever and always on me and my children. It's not their debt. You know, it's not my debt. I don't know what the hell is going on. So it doesn't.
Especially if they start issuing 100-year bonds. So Peter Schiff made this point. He goes, what, you want to issue a 100-year bond? So what, like after 50, 60, 70 years, the people who all issue the bonds, they're not alive. The people who are owed the money, they're not even alive. So you've got the great-grandkids of the people who issued the 100-year bonds going to try collecting. And you got the kids who great-grandparents signed on to it. Like, I don't own this money. Why are we going to do any of this? Because a bondholder is superior to a stockholder, unless you're GM and the government rewrites the rules at the last second. But a bondholder can come. So that's why people would buy bonds, is that they technically can then come in and then own those assets in the event of a bankruptcy. And so if they want enough assets, then they'll come in, buy the bonds, and then they'll own whatever assets or intellectual property because they're superior. Now, as a country, it works a little bit differently.
Okay, now wait. When we go... We'll come back. I want to know, people that are buying bonds foreign countries, are they better off buying them, selling them, not do they owe us, they lend to us? I don't know which is better.
My name is Jacob Hornberger. I'm president.
So which is better, the loner or the loanee?
I mean, it sort of depends if you're a country or if you're, I mean, if you're like a vulture capitalist like George Soros, you might go in and buy a whole bunch of bonds. So then that way, you know, the company's going to default and then you can, and you want those assets for some reason.
Yeah. So see, that's the thing. Is China going to get, are we going to have to sell off all the public lands of the water of the something to pay off something? Because that's exactly what they do with all these other countries. How did our oil get underneath your sand? You know, kind of thing. So this is going to be to pay this off. I don't know, they give it to the pensions? Get the Grand Canyon or something? How does this work? We'll talk about that when we come back. I got to go to the bathroom. We'll be right back.
Okay.
Okay, last segment. What do you want to make? God, what is wrong with this thing? What do you want to make sure that we talk about?
I mean, got a lot of the stuff I wanted to talk about. I mean, one other bonus wild card could be, I watched the other day or listened to the Soho debate between Nick Starwark and Dave Smith, and that was just awesome.
Okay, whoa. Oh, Nick Starwark and Dave Smith. Okay, I thought you were talking, yeah, this May in 2020 is going to be Bill Kristol and Scott Horton. I was like, the heck? Well, I saw that on Freedom's Phoenix, they had a Nick Starwark said he's not liberty, something else, some BS that they're going on about. So what happened?
I mean, basically, it was like you know, an hour and a half of Nick Starwark just getting beaten up and taking own goals. I mean, he was at one point they asked, you know, what type of candidate would you like to have running in the LP? Would you rather have Ron Paul or like a Gary Johnson? And basically, he was like, well, Gary Johnson got more votes, so I'd rather have somebody like Gary Johnson.
No.
And everybody's and then they're talking about different answers when it comes to the Federal Reserve. And then Nick's like, well, I'm sorry that just like one of your pet peeve issues that Bill Weld and Gary Johnson didn't like. He goes, let's talk about what they, when they talk about the Federal Reserve.
Yeah, save it for the show. God. Okay. All right, here we go.
Freedom's the answer. What's the question? You're listening to Ernest Hancock.
Love is a burning thing, and it makes a fiery ring, bound by wild desire.
Wild desire.
I fell into a ring of fire.
I fell into a burning ring of fire. You know, that's what we're going up against now. This is a burning ring of fire from all directions of who stepped into the burning ring of fire. You're telling me on the break that Nick Starwark was in a Soho debate, which is in Manhattan somewhere. And we heard about the Soho. They had these different debates, and they got coming up this May 2020. Is going to be Scott Horton, Anti-War Radio, Fool's Errand about the war in Afghanistan versus Bill Kristol. I'm going, what?
What are the odds that actually ends up happening?
I about zero. I was going, is this like an Eventbrite kind of, you know, call them over kind of, maybe if a bunch of people sign up, they'll actually do it thing or something? I'm like, no way in hell. That's, all right, well, we'll see what happens. And, you know, Scott's got a lot of information. It's all about presentation, though, and who can interrupt more and that kind of thing. So you had Nick Starwark up there. He's a national chair of the Libertarian Party, and I haven't seen the debate. I see a link to it on Freedom's Phoenix. I, you know, Donna found that, whatever, it's up there, and I'll go look at it later. But tell me, did you watch the whole thing?
Yeah, I listened to the entire thing. It was awesome. I wasn't sure. I think the guy's name is Dave Smith. He's a comedian. I've heard his name before. I wasn't sure who he was, but he did a great job defending his points. I mean, this is all just off the cuff.
Which
right
was
now.
What point? He's a conservative, liberal, progressive, libertarian.
Oh no, it's two. So the debate was, it was two libertarian. Well, if you want to call Nick Starwark a libertarian, but you had two libertarians who were up there, and the premise was, should we ever run candidates like Bill? Should the LP ever run candidates like Bill Weld and Gary Johnson ever again? And then you had, yes, they should, was obviously Nick Starwark, and no, they shouldn't, was Dave Smith. And it was who could, you know, and then so I think they each had 15 minutes. Then there was another each had, you know, 5 or 10 minutes. It was, you know, probably went on for about an hour and a half. And I think Dave did a great job of making a lot of awesome points. And one of the points was, you know, should the LP run the candidate? And so, and I think Dave threw it back at him. He goes, you know, would do you think running somebody like Ron Paul would be a good decision for the LP? And basically, Nick Sarwar came out and said, well, you know, Gary Johnson got 4.5% of the votes, and in 1988, Ron Paul only got 0.5% of the votes. So it would be a much better idea to run somebody like Gary Johnson than run somebody like. Then run somebody like Ron Paul, which then obviously, you know, drew the ire of just about every. It's a pretty pro like Liberty, what do they call it, Mises Caucus crowd.
Yeah.
So like Michael Heiss, I think, was one of the guys who helped stack the crowd of having all Mises Caucus. So you might want to get Michael Heiss on at some point. I've got his info.
Yeah, through, no, send to Donna. Don't forget, man. Don't make me ab big. I mean, come on, man.
So I think he was kind of instrumental in getting all this going down. And then there was another time where they were, you know, comparing notes, and they're like, well, you know, I think it was something like Nick Starrock was like, you know, I'm sorry that, you know, just because there's one little pet peeve issue that you have and they don't meet your libertarian litmus test. And he goes, listen, he goes, I'm not really asking for much. He goes, we are all end the Fed people. And then when asked about the Federal Reserve, do you know, you get an hour, like CNN gave them an hour town hall. And what were the answers that they gave when they asked about the Federal Reserve? Gary Johnson said, he doesn't really agree with the dual mandate. Like, really? That's your answer? You don't agree with the dual mandate? Like, is that going to fire anybody up when you're on CNN in front of a... and
get dual mandate? What the hell does that mean? What's a dual mandate?
Like, the Federal Reserve is trying to control inflation. So that's one of their mandates, and also have low unemployment.
Oh, okay, got
Gary Johnson, that's his big pet peeve with the Federal Reserve, is that there's a dual mandate. And then they're like, are you kidding me? The problem is that there is a Federal Reserve. We need to end the Federal Reserve. So when you're running all these, you know, milquetoast candidates who then drop you the second that, you know, second they can anyways, like Bill Weld, you know, that is just, and then Bill Weld's up there talking about Hillary's a person of great character to Rachel Maddow the week of the election.
Yeah, no, I've had this discussions with, you know, Nick. We hung out this summer at Pork Fest. He was there, and
he's staying there, and he's going to be staying there, and he's moving out.
So no, he's going to New Hampshire, man. He's there. Well, this is the same argument's been going on forever, to the point that the Libertarian Party really becomes irrelevant. Now, it has been for a lot of people for a long time. Libertarian philosophy, that's a whole different thing, and however you want to do it and run as, I don't care. But the party, it's just another collective. And it's just, you know, our collective is going to beat up your collective with collectivism. I mean, it just doesn't work that way. And when you have these kind of debates, it's just because, all right, this is what my opinion is, and with the conversations and hanging out and partying and knowing whatever with Nick. He is of the opinion that success is based on money raised, votes gotten, and money raised. I mean, you know, voter registration, you know, registration. So money raised, votes gotten, and registration numbers. Philosophy and party of principle and all that's just buzzwords to him. It's all based on, and if they can convince him, somebody can come up and say, hey, I got lots of money and I did, and kind of nifty only, and because once he made that decision, he was locked in. Once he did that, it was over. Once he did that, that's all that was going to drive him. And it's going to for, like, ever. But he runs a good convention, and he makes things, the trains run on time and keeps control and doing kind of everybody's going, he's a good chair of the meeting. The actual, for the philosophical thing and so on, I'm just like, But, you know, I've run for national chair at least four or five times, you know, bringing this stuff up. You know, I'm the Dave Smith guy going, look, man. But as time goes on, it gets to the point to where, fortunately, with the internet and the communications and so on, you don't really need this liberty nexus of the Libertarian Party anymore, because it was always just really the high school dance that you went to find out where the cool kids were. Well, now you know where the cool kids are. You know, you don't need to go to the damn, yeah, we're out partying on the beach and the bonfire Burning Man. And, you know, the all the other, you know, the geeks and dweebs and jock, whatever the hell's over there, you know, trying to, you know, find some at the high school dance with the teacher chaperones with tasting the punch. So I'm not that worried about it. Are you worried about it, or is Nick need to be gone after, or what?
I mean, I changed my name from Libertarian Advisor to Liberty Advisor, all just because I was so pissed off at the LP and mainly Nick that I was like, screw you guys. I'm not giving you, I don't want to be associated with the Libertarian Party. I mean, it's just such a joke. What they have, like, maybe like 18,000 dues paying members, yet like you had millions of people vote for Gary Johnson. So obviously there's a big disconnect of people that don't want to join the party. But yet Nick looks at that as like, oh, what a great opportunity. If we can just be more milquetoast and more moderate and more middle and more act like the other two parties, that we can get those other 4 million people.
Because it's been promised. If you would only, that's what Bill Weld and that influence and all that crap has been about since for a long time. Coke the Puss, all these guys, all the influences come from there. And it's like, if you would only this, then you would get this. You won't get a free country, but you'll get more money, you know, that kind of thing. And this is, they're going to be in the irrelevance. I don't see how they're, it's like they're being taken over to be killed, and that was the goal. So I don't know. I go to the national conventions to see the guy just to watch the show, you know, the report from, and, you know, I know what's going on. So what role I'll have in this, I don't know. Now we'll talk about it.
Well, I mean, the good thing is now it seems like there's more Mises Caucus people, and there's more people who are fired up to do something about it. So, and one of the awesome memes that I saw is it was a lot of the climate activist Greta Thunberg going around, and one of them was, you know, like you've
that eco girl from the sailboat from Europe yelling at people at the UN.
Yeah, well, one of them, she was at the UN saying, you know, you've taken my childhood and you've crushed my hopes and dreams or something like that. And then one of them was in regards to Nick Starwalk being the LP chair. It's like, Nick Starwalk is LP chair. You've stolen my childhood and you've stolen my dreams or something. But they overlaid that. But let's real quickly before we head off, I spent 2 seconds investigating this Greta Thunberg. So her dad is Svante Thunberg. He's a Swedish author, arts manager, producer, and actor, having written several things. And so it means she comes from an actor parent. His father was also an actor, producer, you know, famous guy. Her mother is a trained professional opera singer who's, you know, good at getting the, because I watched this a couple seconds of it and I'm like, this is so acted and scripted. She's doing a great job, but she is an actor. Yeah. I bet she actually believes all this crap, just like I did when I was 16 and propagandized into all this. But okay, great. We got to go re-engineer our entire economy because some 16-year-old girl isn't going to go back to school on Fridays.
Yeah, her thing is like, we're watching you. We're watching. That's exactly what the politicians, these guys fear. Ooh, we're being watched. But I'm going, yeah, American citizenry is watching you too. And what is our standard? You know,
Facebook,
what are we
actually
looking for?
Took down a post where I had a picture of her, and then it said, and then it showed Nazis using children in propaganda. It goes, yeah, the Nazis use children for their propaganda too. And Zuckerberg took that one down from me.
Of course, so, of
not
course,
not to compare
did.
Nazi.
All right, when we come back, we're gonna go a little bit long because I got a new video to show
spreading
you.
Spreading the message of liberty, crypto.
All right, I want you to see this. This is Cameron. Is playing around with some new special effects that he can do. And how long is this? It's only 44 seconds, okay? So this is just, he wanted to show what he can play with and do. So here it goes. Now, what it's from, is this the scene from Star Trek 4 when they had to save the whales, you know, to save the future kind of thing? So this is what he did with it. Can you see the screen? No, you... Yeah, you can't up there. Damn it. Can you go on the live stream? Go on the live stream so that you can see it, Tim.
Sorry, I muted myself so I couldn't interrupt you. Yeah.
Thank you. Now, did you go to the live stream?
Yep, I'm there right now.
Okay. Can you see that blue screen or whatever it is?
Yep.
All right. Okay, let me get the volume up. Okay, it's just 44 seconds. This is what Cameron sent us.
Yeah.
It's a sperm whale swimming. Chip's going after it. These are the. They shoot the harpoon. Dink! It hits something cloaked. What the heck? Ah, come on.
You know, it's like frozen, so I can't really see it on D-Live. Okay, now it's going.
It's the precariat there protecting it like the Klingon Bird of Prey ship did that Star Trek had. So he just replaced it with, you know, the Precariat, which I thought was awesome. I saw that. I just laughed. I go, what the hell is this? What's he talking? I go, oh, that was. So he's playing with the way to animate it, to put it in to things like this. So it's just continuing to have some fun. I'm really looking forward to this. I'm going to be leaving October 4th or 5th, something like that. And I'm going to be gone for a few weeks doing the show on the road. And I'm going to Boston to help Bob with his family home remodel and do kind of whatever. And we're going to go spend time with Derek and Jay. And I introduce them to the Quill and the CAC and everything, and Keen and Manchester, and make sure he's, when he's back there, the boys. We're also going to, I'm going to get a 40 watt laser at least back there to start making some pirate boxes, and we're playing with that while we got some downtime. And so I'll be gone for a while, and I can't do every day. You know, if you wanted to come in studio and guest host, or you and Frank co-host or something like that, we could work that out.
Yeah, I'd be down for that.
Yeah, we'll see if we can work that, because Donna will be here, so she can help, and she does everything anyway. So, you know. But so you guys start thinking about that from the 4th, 5th till like the 23rd or so. I'm going to be gone for almost 3 weeks, I think. So there's going to be plenty of opportunity for you guys to take over the show, you know, so I don't have to. So it suits me. So let me know about that, okay?
Yeah, and luckily, well, one of my speaking gigs got canceled. I don't say luckily, but so 17th through 19th, 17th through 20th, I'm going to be gone for a wedding. And then I've got, there's a whole Vegas blockchain week from the 26th to the 31st I'm going to be doing media from. So hopefully I can try to interview some of the big crypto guys out there.
You know, one thing I'd like is we're going to, I got a new book. You know, we got the latest book that we get, you know, like a proof copy from Amazon. And here, next to my heart.
Yeah, I saw Kingsley was giving them out at Anarchadelphia. I wasn't there, but I saw he was posting pictures of them giving out your books.
Well, we sent a couple hundred or something, or hundreds, a lot of the ones that we printed, you know, that it was updated, but it wasn't, you know, all the goodies, because we sent them to Etienne de la Boutaille, you know, to pass them out. And I'm glad, yeah, they got them out. You know, did they mention anything about them, or they're hit or not?
I saw him posting photos of them passing them out. So they
very
were
cool.
They got proof that they did it. They're passing them
out.
Yeah,
no, you know, this is, it's got it going on. Now, what we did is the fourth letter of Reprisal and the first letter of Captain Kidd has been added. This is, what about the children? I don't know.
Jay Noon calling in right now. Hey, Jay, we're on the stream still.
Oh, so what is he doing? On the Twit, what the hell is that? Telegram, you know, page. We got a Telegram page. A lot of guys, you know.
I know he was asking me, saying that I love the wealth of info. Hey, Jay, any chance you could call or Discord into Free Talk Live tonight? Tonight might be difficult because I've got to watch the kids, but I did a 40-minute show with Mark Edge the other day where they put it on at the end of Free Talk Live. So I don't know if he knew that I already did that, and I had called in one other time to Free Talk Live.
Yeah, just bring the kids in with you, set them on your lap, and just do it, man. Whatever, let them scream.
Okay, yeah, as long as they know the deal. That
yeah. Well, I mean, you know, if they say, look, I can do a kids run around and kind of, you know, come here, be on the mic, whatever, just make it part of the show.
It's some sort of like Big Brother season finale that my wife is going over to one of her friend's house to watch Big Brother season finale.
What? Yeah, ever.
A lot of other things I'd rather be doing. Okay, maybe he.
Yeah, the book is really, you know, it's really coming together. It gets better all the time. You know, we kind of took out a bunch of the Kaepernick, you know, the Nike just acquire kind of stuff, because we were just doing that, you know, take space and have fun. But he put in different graphics and colored and wardrobe designs and different stuff, you know, for our pirates. It's awesome. This keeps getting better and better. So I got to proofread this over the next couple of days. I'm going to go ahead and order a bunch, and we'll have them for some other functions that are coming up. But the big thing that we're really pushing at the crypto that I wanted you to do is I can get you the single sheets that we did for where did we send them? Oh, it was to Denver at Andreas Antonopoulos' crypto thing that Davi was doing a marketing presentation on. And we circulated it there, and it's on Scuttlebutt, on reputation, on software, you know, where we have people that have their own reputation scores to their ID that goes to them. You know, this is, and it's biometric of this is, this person did this and said that about whatever. This is their reputation score of people based, and then you get to, you know, give evaluation of the people that are watching the watchers, you know, the reputation score, the people giving reputations. So this letter, I'm really spreading out through the community, hoping that they can code it. Now, Paul Rosenberg said they had started on something like that before, you know, and, you know, that'll be interesting. Yeah, I got to call back. He's going to do the video for the summit, so I got to get going. Anything
apparently
else?
That was a butt dial by Jay Noon when he was fixing his chicken coop. So, I'm like, you should know.
Well, we're going to go visit Jay. You know, Bob needs to see his domes and all the stuff he's doing. It's very Bob, you know. So it's like, I love seeing, you know, Derek and Jay, you know, become good friends. And I get Bob in there. These guys, man, I definitely want to go to their zombie apocalypse hideout. We're going to be living large. You got to have the right guys. Upgrade. Anything else you want to go on, man?
No, I think all the repo stuff has mainly been captivating my attention as of late. Lots of places you guys can find out more information I've done that on. Like the one I did with Mark Edge, I think was really good. It was at the end of, I think, like Friday.
Have you sent us the link? Do we need to know? How do we know?
I can send you guys the links of all the recent stuff.
Why do I got to ask you for this stuff? You're killing me. You know, you got something cool, send me to cool. I put up cool. I got a cool place to be cool. Don't you want to be cool? Be cool.
We will, yeah.
Help make me cool. I need to be cool.
Well, also, one of the cool things I did is the guy that runs the largest cryptocurrency Facebook group in the world, I chatted with him yesterday, told him all about how he needed to be on your guys' show, and so I just sent Donna the info. And he also started like his own, because he is not, even though he's on, runs a big Facebook group, he's not a big Facebook fan. So he started his own sort of like Facebook just for crypto people called Uptrend. And I think he got like 5,000 new users last month or something.
Really?
Anyways, I sent the info to Donna and you yesterday with that. So you guys can talk to Jeff.
Yeah.
I was red pilling them like crazy, going into all like what the Federal Reserve is. Starting from like the beginning and the Rothschilds and the whole deal and then what the repo thing is and just red pilling the whole.
They need to just watch Century of Enslavement by Corbett.
And I did pimp that too. I told them the other thing you need to do is Century of Enslavement. I mentioned that. I mentioned Creature from Jekyll Island a bunch of times and also Mike Maloney's Hidden Secrets of Money Part 4, I think, are the.
So these guys didn't know it?
Even though they're crypto people, you get a lot of crypto people that don't know this type of stuff. And he seemed like he didn't really know the whole history of the Fed and what the deal was.
Well, how old is he?
Probably like 25, 26.
Oh, okay. Lives, well, you know.
But I think he lives in Bali or Bali, however you pronounce it, and does a whole kind of like perpetual traveler. I did 99% of the talking because it was on the Fed. And he even said like, hey, I want you to do 90% of the talking, which I probably did even more than that. Because he didn't know a bunch about it. So he let me go and I just kept going on and on and on about it. And
as you would. See, that's one thing that, you know, the good and the bad about breaks is, you know, chop up Tim a little bit or chop up Ernie. I mean, you know, there's always yakking. But the one thing that I like about doing the podcast is that when somebody's on a roll, man, just let them go, which is why, and it's a timing thing. James Corbett will be on again tonight. And he and I just do a live cast for 30, 60 minutes. You know, we try and schedule an hour, but a lot of times we just get it done 30. There's no sense just yakking. There's no, you know, set time we got to fill or anything. If he can get it done, answer all the questions, 30 minutes, boom, done. It's a nice, tight show. So tonight will be James Corbett and without commercial interruption, a lot less Ernie interruption because it's a podcast without breaks.
Well, the first show I ever did was yours, and so I'm so used to where if I pause for like a millisecond, then you'll jump in.
No dead air on my show!
I've been trained to be able to run over. But anyway, it obviously doesn't work with all people, and I'm sure you've seen it in the comments, and I see it in the comments of stuff that I do. You know what? Not for everybody, but thank you.
I know. It's like when I get in any kind of group thing, you know, I got like 15 billion. I got stories got just down there. Going, whoa, damn. Ernie, take a breath, you know. But there's always stuff to relay, and when you know a lot about a lot there, at least you know, certainly a lot of questions on this thing. There's plenty for us to say, and I got a story for everything, and we're creating more stories, and there's going to be...
I even tied in Bilderberg Group and the Block Scream and AXA and Henry DeCastro.
Oh, what'd they think of that? What'd they think of that?
He was digging it, like, oh, I didn't really know any of that stuff, but he wasn't tone vasing it in terms of dismissing it. And like, you know, I'm like, not trying to poo-poo Bitcoin, but I think that people should know that, you know, I'm not making any gigantic 100 leaps to connecting all the dots.
What was the loss in here, let me see who this is. Cerny. That's probably sales. You know, I thought it might be Jay calling in. What was the when they heard all this about, you know, they were doing this and so on? I'm wondering what the response was, and to the fact that, you know, like 40% of the hash rate went away on Bitcoin. What's that all about?
I'm not an expert in that one. In terms of the first question, that interview hasn't aired yet, so we just taped it as a Zoom, and then I sent over the link last night. So I don't think it's actually aired yet. So we'll see what the members say, because obviously I'm sure I'm going to melt a few snowflakes in there. The other question was about the hashing rate going down. I saw Berwick posted that one of the biggest miners in the world, if not the biggest miner, somehow went offline. I don't know if it's some sort of technical reason. And that is what sent
That sent
the avalanche of all the different sell orders that were going on. I haven't looked. I was paying more attention to the repo stuff. I'm calling it the repo madness instead of reefer madness. So the repo madness was captivated most of my attention. I figured with Bitcoin, I'm not, you know, panic. I'm a long-term hodler, so I don't really care about, you know, what's going on in the day-to-day. People are literally asking Jeff Berwick for refunds because he wasn't able to tell people to pull all their money out of Bitcoin right before it went down. And he's like, listen, if you guys can't handle a 10%, you know, decline in Bitcoin or 20% decline in Bitcoin, then maybe you guys shouldn't be in Bitcoin. You know, so people are like, we want
to
money
back.
Want
what money back? From whom? For
they're
what?
Paying for his one of his newsletters, and they're like, and you didn't tell us to get out of Bitcoin before it went down. He's like, well, no one could have predicted that that the largest miner in the world would be offline and sent the avalanche orders. And
Okay, so now I'm going to look up something. I want to know what the, I could put in hash rate, you know, and see that going down, but I'm wondering who it was that went down and if they were betting on the comp. You know, a lot of these guys, they'll lose money to get the Bitcoin, and then they'll just wait for it to go up, but they just keep mining. I know some guys that just keep mining. Well, sometimes, you know, I'll go in and I'll flip on the, you know, not when it's hot in the summer, but starting to cool off, so I don't have to, you know, run the, you know, coolers all the time and spend that extra money. So I'll go, all right, let's go ahead and start mining. I'll throw in a few $100 to do, like, Bitcoin Cash a month, and I, you know, at a loss and don't care because I think the future is going to go up. But this is my concern. Bitcoin is not enough. Enough what? Enough anything for anybody. It's not private enough. So a lot of the privacy guys are going towards something else. So go to Monero or Dash or, you know, Horizon or Zcash or whatever. So they got more privacy over here to go Monero. On the promise that's private. I mean, how the hell would I know? That's what they say. So they go over there. We got privacy, pirate coin. Then they have people that, oh, we're more compliant, we'll be compliant, we'll compliance, you know, Satoshi vision of, BCH, BV, kind of, we're, woo, or SV, whatever it is. Satoshi vision is a rights thing, and we'll be compliant. He screamed about how compliant they're going to be. Pick us, we're compliant. We're compliancy guys, you KYC, everybody compliant. So I'm going, all right. Well, there's that. They got that choice. Bitcoin is somewhere in the middle. It's not claiming to be a compliance coin. It does have a lot of, you know, features that could easily go towards that, but it still can be used in such a way that you could do get a lot of privacy out of it. You could do paper wallets, you know. So I don't see Bitcoin being compliant enough, you know, to be up there with GoldmanSachs.gov coin, and I don't see Bitcoin being private enough to compete with a lot of the other people that, you know, were promised privacy, and that's
what
they want.
It's like the Libertarian Party. Like, they're just trying to be milquetoast,
right,
like, in the middle. They're gonna,
and go down the same road for the same reasons in the same way.
Bill Weld. Gary, Bitcoin's like the Bill Weld of crypto.
I don't know. No. Shit. Yeah, that's so good meme. You know, Bitcoin, the Barry Weld of crypto. I mean, the Bill Weld of crypto. Bitcoin to Bill Weld to crypto with a good graphic. That's ugly, man. You should do that.
I don't know. There's, I think there's so few people though who'd actually like understand it. I mean, the
no,
right people,
those few people are the ones that get it the most. You know, I can make that Bitcoin the Bill Weld of crypto. I got a new saying. Give me, because that's exactly the point that I'm making. It's just like a sucker bet, you know, and it's not, you know, Bitcoin. Like
you're selling yourself out for a few shekels now while totally trashing all the principles and everything that got you there.
Right. And this is, I think, what Nick is doing and all. See, did they talk about Justin Amash running this POTUS?
Very briefly, they mentioned something like, because they were talking about the whole anti-war and how basically even Gary Johnson and Bill Weld were not that anti-war up there. And I think at one point Dave Smith said, well, you know, based on the rhetoric, the most anti-war candidate that was running was actually Donald Trump. You know, to which at the aghastness of, you know, this was as what they were saying as candidate, not necessarily, you know, after the fact. And then somebody said that, you know, if Justin Amash wants to come over and he wants to have a big anti-war message, then I'll support the anti-war message is what Dave Smith was saying. It was very briefly.
Yeah, it was, you know, a retired federal judge Buttrick, John Buttrick, was on the platform committee. He was committee chairman, you know, in the 90s. And he went to the last convention in New Orleans. We were there together. And I remember him, you know, for years has been really on this anti-war thing. He's going, it's such a large, easy, low-hanging fruit thing. What the hell is going on in the Libertarian Party that they never quite embrace that enough? They always bring it in like Neil Bortz to justify we got to go to war with someone at the Atlanta convention in 04. You know, that he gets up, talks to, oh, yeah, we got to go, oh, and they're beating the drum. Then there's always, it's the coctopus. You know, the coke industries, these brothers and everything, they really do everything they can to influence the Libertarian Party. But it all, no matter what liberty thing it is, it always is tied down to who gets elected, who's going to be kingmaker, who we're going to pull percentage. It's all gaming for energy. It's all about oil. So I'm going, yeah, this is not going to flush much longer either. It's just like outing of, you know, then you have, you know, Koch and Soros coming together on some anti, whatever the hell they were doing. And I'm going, this is so obvious now to what's happening. Where are the people represented? Where's the freedom thing? We kind of set that to the side because it's controversial. Wow, really? This is why Trump won. And I there's something else going on that I don't even really care. I didn't want to understand it. It doesn't matter. We're going to be advocating for the individual and doing some whip ass and some activism here that's going to have some impact nationwide. And this vaccine education summit is already doing it. I can feel it. I can see it. The questions asked by the reporters, the people that are going, the threats at who wants to meet with me and who doesn't. They kind of, I'm going, okay. So Friday, I won't be able to. It won't be until next Tuesday, that because it's we're going to do a rerun tomorrow because Don and I got to get ready for, no, Friday. Tomorrow we have a show. And then Friday we're going to do a rerun probably and get everything ready because I have a 9 o'clock meeting with a politician and we're going to explain it to each other. So we'll see what happens. I'll let you know next Tuesday how that comes out. And, you know, we'll see. So I'm going to go ahead and stop the stream because I want to tell you who it is, okay? Hold on a second. All right, guys. You know, yeah, wait till next week. Hopefully I'll be like, enough people know that, you know, in case. Peace.
See you guys.